Om Shanti and good morning. So today's topic is the master of self-sustenance, and it will be in an interview format by Sister Helena. Will interview Brother David. So just to briefly introduce, Sister Helena is came in Gyan in early 80s, and she's a BK teacher. She carries a lot of online activities and gathers a lot of people. My personal experience with her is that ever since I have come in Gyan in 86, I have seen every year pretty much her in Madhuban. She's like Angad, unshakable faith. Very powerful soul, I must say. And Brother David also came in Gyan in early 80s in Australia. Brother David takes care of art and music department. He got a lot of personal blessings from Baba. And one of them was be an entertainer and a great singer as well as a musician. We eat his bread every single day, so he sustains us from various. He's a great contributor, like an angel, always a giver in various forms. My personal experience always has been great with him. He's a great friend as well, and he takes us for walks and what have you not. But yeah, he's a great contributor to the family. So without further much ado, I hand over to you all. Om Shanti.
Thank you, Brother Rajesh. And yes, lovely to have this chance for. I feel maybe it's a conversation, actually, with Brother David. An interesting topic is the master of self-sustenance. So I'll be asking you actually what that means to you, and we'll look into the different ways in which you've become that. I do get the sense that you've become that. Perhaps we can, for those who don't know you, we can look a little bit more at, I mean, Rajesh said a few things, but a little bit more of sort of what's led you to actually this point where you're really a full-blown Madhavanivasi, which is, as I'm sure you're aware, very unusual for someone from a thoroughly Western upbringing and culture. There's just yourself and Golo. Yeah. So that must have its interesting challenges. And how you can maintain your inner poise and your, you know, you notice his smile. He always has this this smile as though he's he just always enjoys life, you know. And so we're going to see how much we can find out where this comes from, how he does it. So your Brahmin life began in Australia, I believe.
Yeah. I started this in 84 in the Kimberley area of Western Australia, northwestern Australia. And at the time I was living on a very small or a large property outside a very small town. And I'd just finished painting my experience of 1 year where I lived in the forest for 1 year, not by running away from anything, but actually just very interested in exploring new places or a new land, so to speak. And I had such a wonderful experience there that I wanted to paint this, my experience of that, which I didn't know how to paint, but I just had the thought. And of course, I end up painting this experience over probably 1.5 years before Gyan. And that 1.5 years before Gyan, because I had experience of this point of light, and I was so inspired by that that I wanted to paint that. So that's why I choose the airbrush, actually the spray paint, because the spray painting could capture that sort of rendering of like an orb of light radiating out, and the spray paint, I saw that that really captured that sort of rendering colours easily and fast. And one BK visited that property I was staying on, and he saw that picture of that point of light, and his first question he asked me, do you know what you've painted? And of course, I shared my experience of this image of light I experienced, and he said, yes, this is image of soul and supreme soul. And so I had that like 1.5 years before Gyan, so that was so, the experience was so wonderful in that sense that, that's why I had that endeavor to paint that. Mm-hmm. And of course, once he shared that knowledge of soul and supreme soul, you know, I was thinking, well, I had that experience before I got the knowledge. So it was an easy, in a sense, easy to, well, I understood all of the Gyan and I started practicing straight away. And I remember sort of one of the favorite things I used to do was for meditation. Of course, I didn't have a translator or anything like that, but I'd set a book in front of me with a candle behind the book so I couldn't see the candle, but then I'd put a chrome thumbtack on the woodwork at about eye level, and that flame would reflect off that chrome thumbtack like a point, just a tiny point of light. And of course, even if the wind was blowing, because I still lived out in the bush, that reflection would always be quite stable because it's just on this tiny little thumbtack. So, and I remember sort of being so concentrated that I realized that sort of, wow, through this concentration power, I felt that many things that come along to me in that early days that, say, used to affect me or upset me in some way, that was changing. It was very clear in a short space of time. Mm-hmm. I had the power to accommodate those things and adjust and tolerate and that. So I felt, wow, this is good, this works.
Yeah. Wow. And then how did the music start? Had you always been musical? Had you always played?
Well, I did do music at school, but not seriously. I think when I was in traveling in the northwest, in those days there was no TV in the town. So the entertainment for the local people was outdoor activities, bands, groups, musicians. So it was like this very, like outdoors sort of environment, but, and I was very inspired at that time with guitar to start playing guitar. So I sort of self-taught that, just watch people playing music and, you know, watching what they do with the chords and all that. But there was always a feeling when I was younger there should always be music. That was a sort of feeling too. I felt, wow, there should be music everywhere. Now, of course, in after many years in Gyan, of course, the music is more, now probably more so is like with the nature, with the, like the natural sort of music of nature, of course, that can be, that's music in itself as well. So it's not necessarily just playing music, but to act, the ability to listen as well, to hear music in things.
In everything.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm. So then we'll go on to, you know, how this, you expressed this in Brahmin life, and you also had limits on how much you used it. We'll go into that. But perhaps at this point you can say what self-sustenance actually means to you so that we clear what we're talking about.
Well, I think self-sustenance is something where, which I looked at earlier was like, okay, we each grind our own ingredients. When Baba says, okay, grind your own ingredients. We have the Gyan, we have all the knowledge, but what really works for me within that? And of course, as we know, we're all very different. We all have a different part to play. And what works for one may not work for another in that sense. Or it might be just a different time period where, okay, this particular time I'm working on this aspect of self-sustenance. But then that changes over time as well. And what I've felt really is like how to make a meditative state in as many activities as I can, or like in a sense when we say now or never, you know, what does that really mean? You know, when Baba says it's now or never, you either do it now or you never do it. Yeah. So it's almost like, okay, if that's the case, then how can I make this moment the best? Or how can I be in meditation now? And I remember once recently, actually Bridge Mullenby was giving a talk, and he was playing on this aspect of meditation and being in meditation, and he's saying to everyone, should we go for meditation? You know, and then the hand sort of went up and said, well, if you're going to go for meditation, then what are you doing now? You know, so it was almost like, okay, in that sense, it's like, okay, we can go and sit down for meditation, but it's not like we're going for meditation. You know, so how to make it that I can be in meditation in a natural state. You know, not sort of, and of course that's a huge subject. I mean, that's our journey, isn't it? To actually be as much in remembrance or in a meditative state as possible. But of course, you know, that's easier said than done in some aspect, because it's like one of the things I sort of like with that aspect is like the using drama as a starting point for that as well, because sometimes or many times when we look at something or we're doing something, do we accept fully what is happening as drama, or we're content with that? Because many times we might say, oh, well, that's not accurate, or that's not right, or you know, we have this sort of thing in the mind where we don't accept what is happening in front of us. And I think when we slowly, or when we come to terms with that aspect that, okay, it is drama, then it's really that full stop. Because when Baba says, okay, put a full stop, that is really the aspect of drama, isn't it? If we say full stop, it's just like, it's happening, it is as it is, and no thought, no internal dialogue of, you know, that should be or shouldn't be, or that's wrong or that's right. It's just drama. And I think as Baba sees it as well, of course, he sees this whole game, it is a drama, and he also just observes it. He doesn't, you know, like, I mean, he gives us knowledge of, yes, this is, you know, what is right, good karma, and what's going to benefit ourselves, but whatever's happening, he knows that's going to play out. So he just sees it as the detached observer, and he knows that we'll actually learn through that as well. You know, that's how we learn as well. Because many times I've experienced, you know, sometimes after an event, and what may seemingly be like a setback or some, you know, karmic sort of thing, but you realize that after some time that actually that's the best thing that could have happened. How I learned through that process is actually the best way that could have happened. So it really was the best at that time, but it's our ability to see that at that time and accept that at that time, that this is, when Baba says, you know, what's happening now is the best, and it's, you know, better, and you know, that whole aspect of it's auspicious this time now.
So, well, the theme for December is Jivan Mukti, isn't it? You know, putting spirituality actually into life. And it sounds as though you've always felt the very deep importance of that. You're not wanting, you know, meditation or spirituality as something, you know, that takes you out of things, but you always see, actually, how can I bring that into action?
Yeah, and that's been a journey as well, because, I mean, I guess sort of in the early days of Gyan and even pre-Gyan, you know, this whole notion of, you know, which was a big movement, of course, in the 60s and out of being here and now. And I used to think, what is, you know, when they say just be here and now, you know, what does that really mean? And of course, putting that across to a Gyan sense of point, it means if we're really in this moment now, that's, everything is complete within that. There's not a, and of course, according to drama, each moment is measured for eternity as well. isn't it? It's like this moment now. We were all here last Kalpa, yeah? Anyone thinks they shouldn't be here or weren't here last Kalpa? So, I mean, we understand that as a knowledge point. Okay, yes, we were here last 5,000 years ago, right now at this moment, you know, but do we accept that in every moment, you know? And sometimes I see this as like when there is that ability to focus and be concentrated in the moment, that's when like almost a magic happens as well. Because we hear things that sort of maybe we... Because the thing is, if we're thinking, can we be in this present moment if we're thinking? Do you think we can be in the present moment while thinking?
A short while after, yeah.
So it's like if we're thinking, what we're either thinking about something past or future or what I think I might be going to do now or next, but it's not actually this moment. That's what I mean, does that make sense? So it's like, okay, if I'm just doing, what I've found a lot is if I'm actually doing something with the hands and I start thinking of something else, it's actually dangerous. There's always a margin for some accident or something because you're not fully focused on that particular action. So when that happens again and again and again, you start to feel, wow, that it's actually if I'm doing this action, how to do that action and be 100% present while doing that action. And then it means that there's no margin then of any waste because we're already 100% focused on that job.
Mm.
It's not like, you know, I'm doing this job and I want to be over there and so I'm rushing to do this to get somewhere over there or some other particular point. And so I'm not really fully focused where I am. Mm. So that's almost like a feeling of discontent or something within that as well, because it's not what I want to be over there, but I'm actually doing this right now here. So it's almost like that's a way, you know, I have to bring it back to I can actually be 100% doing this. And then, of course, each step or each moment will bring me to that next activity, which will still be 100% if I'm focused in that. So in that way, it's almost like then the feeling of I couldn't have done any better. There's a real feeling of that contentment in that task because you've been 100% focused. If I'm not 100% focused, then I still won't be contented. It never will be good enough, actually. There'll be a feeling, oh, you know, it's there'd be something missing within that.
Mm. And Baba teaches us to do everything within the context of the cycle, doesn't he? This was something that sort of puzzled me when I was first in Gyan, because there seemed to be so much instruction to, you know, remember other times. It wasn't just about being here now. Because, you know, I'd tried practicing that. I don't know that I'd been very successful, really, before Gyan. And so Baba combines the two, doesn't he, actually? Because when he says spin the cycle of self-realization, you know, he adds so much depth to actually what I am doing now. Yeah?
Mm.
Can you say what sort of made you, you know, maybe challenges you've gone through or something that have made you really able to apply that being here now? Because, you know, all of us BKs have got specialities, and we've got our own special way of our special insights and ways of seeing things and so on. And nobody's got your part, so nobody's going to be able to do what you've done or what you're doing. But basically, I think the lessons that you've gone through and the challenges that you've gone through to get where you are now would actually apply to all of us. So it would, it'd be great if in this conversation, we can become clear as to some yuktis and some insights as to actually how we can do this too.
Well, I think we all have our own specialties and talents and that in different ways, you know. But I think one of the key points of that is that, you know, sometimes going, you're like looking at some in the Lockic world where, you know, some of the great teachers and inspiring sort of speakers where they say, okay, you know, even I remember Steve Jobs in some of his quotes, you know, he'd say, you know, don't stop looking until you find your real specialty, and once you find that, you'll know that, and then a lot of magic can happen. Because it's almost like we, until we find something we can be completely that's our specialty, and really, like you said, no one has anyone else's same part. So of course we all have specialties, but I think when we find that, it means we can, when we pursue that, we can be 100% in that process doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think this is, I mean, Golden Age, we're all artists, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
We're all artists in Golden Age, and we're soul conscious naturally.
Mm-hmm.
And it means that then, being all artists, I mean, one of the whole things with art is that when the soul is doing that and is 100% in that process doing that, that's what creates the art. If you see somebody sweeping the floor and they're totally 100% focused, it's an art.
Mm-hmm.
You watch them and it's like you think, wow, everything's just so, you know, like it's like when we do something, when we're in that process, of course it's a magic within that, but it means I have to be 100% in that process doing that. That's what makes it the art.
Mm.
Because all the energy is going into that. There's nothing outside of that. So it becomes naturally then a natural art. And of course, yeah.
So isn't it now, actually, that we're the artists?
Yeah.
You know, Baba says he gives us the pen to draw our fortune. And isn't the artistry, the utter loveliness of the Golden Age on every level, it comes from now, doesn't it? So this is why, I think this is what this conversation is about, really. This is, you know, what we're interested in, how can we deepen this in our own lives?
Yeah, and I think that aspect of it, when we're able to make everything an art as well, I mean, it's not necessarily a picture, a painting, but it means the art is like the art of life in a sense, isn't it? The art of life is okay. It might be a variety of things, but when we're doing, look at children, you know, sometimes Baba says they're like the Mahatmas, the young children, because they're so innocent and they'll play a game and then they'll get to a point where then they'll go to and play another game or do something else and switch to this and this and this. And of course, the whole days might be playing, but it's not the same thing all the time. It's not the same game. If it's to put them in the same game, then they won't like that, you know. They want to do something different, something new. So I think when we have that variety of things to do or know what really works for me, you know, I mean, I have the same sometimes with doing digital work or computer work that's okay for a certain point, and then you just a certain point you have to do something different, you know, do a different task or something, and create things that, you know, I like and enjoy for a service that is a variety of things.
So there's a lot of faith in yourself, I think. This keeps coming over. Have you always had a lot of faith in yourself?
Yeah, well, I guess sort of a few years ago was interesting because I was you know, doing the computer work, and now computer work's become more than the handwork, hand painting. I mean, the days when painting these were like by hand, that was before computers and the large printers, so it was all by hand. And it got to a certain point, then it changed over to computers and Photoshop. And then, of course, Now there's many players doing that in Madhaban and Shantivan, working with Photoshop and images and that. And of course we can print them not just here in Madhaban, but in other places as well. But then I remember sort of I got interested in, there was one brother who came from Australia that was going to, his aim was to teach someone in OAS, teach someone in ORC in outside of Delhi, the retreat center, Global Hospital and Madhaban to make this sourdough bread. Yeah. So I was really interested in that because I'd always sort of, I'd always made bread just normal, well, what I call normal, but yeast bread. But I was interested in this thing and because that interest was there at a certain level, all of the things that sort of, just fell into place to do that, like all happened in a matter of a couple of weeks, you know, an oven come along, a commercial oven and all the baking trays and all this equipment. And I thought, wow, this is just like a magic that all of a sudden started doing this. And then all these things just arrived and I hadn't said anything to anyone, but drama just sort of, in a way, brought all those things to all of a sudden I was doing this bread. And it was such a lovely balance between digital or computer work to go up to the house and just to make bread, you know. It's like that sort of change was enough to give that sort of the variety or whatever to that it was another part. And of course people like the bread, so that's, you know, it's that's also good as well, a bonus. Yeah.
Yes.
So variety of things to do, variety, but whatever works in that sense for each one, you know, as well, because not everyone's going to make bread, you know. There's many different artistic forms of, or something which you can be involved in, which you're really 100% into, you know, as well.
You make your life and your Brahmin life sound very kind of lovely and very easy. And I know you had challenges. Perhaps we could look at one or two of your challenges and actually how you've overcome them, because I think we'd be really interested. You seem to have a very solid sense of your own value, faith in your part, and also faith in the power of spirituality, and that kind of whatever you're doing, you know, really make sure you bring spirituality into that. Back to the earlier part of your story, when you came into Gyan, and yes, there was already this painting, and there was music. And then you're in a country where the sister in charge is Didi Nirmala. And she didn't think music mattered. You just switch an electronic thing on and it plays. You don't need live music. I don't know what she thought about the painting. Probably she didn't think painting was very important either. So would you like to go into that a bit and what you learned through her and the challenges? Because there must have been times when it really kind of knocked you back a bit. Is that right? Or?
Well, it's like, I remember when I first came to Madhaban, I think the first trip to Madhaban was 86, in February 86, and when I come back from Madhaban I was in Perth at that time, Western Australia, and, well, I was in Broome still, in the northwest, but I come back from Madhaban and I moved straight into a centre after my first trip to Madhaban. And I remember Dr. Nirmala said, "Acha, if you want to be a centre Nawasi, you have to renounce the music and the art. You know, you won't have time for that." And I thought, okay, that's fine. Because those things came to me as a gift anyway. I didn't really learn those as such. You know, they just came as an inspiration to start doing those things. So I didn't feel like I was, and I felt it really was a godly gift in that sense. So it wasn't like a feeling I was giving up something. But interesting enough, when I said, yeah, that's fine, to Didi, and of course I think she was testing how detached I was from those. Because in those days in Australia, there was many musicians and artists that come into Gyan. There's quite a few in Australia. So, and the souls that were doing those things for a livelihood or their thing, that was more of a challenge for them, because a lot of them were getting home at, you know, Amrit Vela from work, and then to follow a Brahmin lifestyle was a challenge for them, because their profession was these music or bands and playing, you know, late at night and all these clubs and that. So, but interesting enough, the person who was running the centre, he had, within a week I was doing art and music. He'd asked me, the centre in charge, so what could I say, you know? Diddy was 5,000 miles away over in New South Wales. I was in Perth, you know, another 4,000 miles or something to the west. But no, it was just a feeling that was really that sort of test of, and when, of course, Gyan Srova, I mean, Diddy was the third Diddy, a daddy that was looking after Gyan Srova. First we had Daddy Chandramani, and then she left the body, and then there was Daddy Manaha, and she left the body, and then Diddy came. So I was already here at that time. But, many times with the music things, and I think Diddy could see that I was not as detached as she what she thought I should be with these things. So many times people would ask me to go to programs in India to do music, and Diddy say no, you know. Most of the time she'd say no, 99%. And of course, at first that was like a challenge, because I think why, you know, live music compared to recorded music is very different. It's a different experience. Because, you know, if I'd... but that was a story she'd say no. So, and of course I would play with that as well, because if somebody had asked me and I didn't really want to go myself and I didn't have the courage to say no, I'd say, you ask Dr. Nirmal. If she says yes, then I'll go. And I know she would say no, so that was... But interesting, the last year, she would say yes to everything. In this last year, she would say yes to these. So I was thinking, okay, did it sort of because obviously she knew she was coming to her karma teach stage or final stage. So she was in that sense more detached from those things. Because sometimes she'd say, no need to go to play music, just put on tape or CD. No need to go and play. Why spend the money to go on a flight and this and this and this? So I say, Diddy, it's not the same as live music. But that was, so she had her ways of testing. And then, of course, when I become more detached from that, then that was also...
So how did you become more detached?
Well, not seeing it as, I mean, this is one of the things I think with what we're doing as well. I mean, obviously in a Lockic world, if we look at, you know, what's, in a Lockic world, what's the... For Lockic souls, what's a big attraction? You know, it can be artwork. You know, look at some of the artwork. It's sold for millions and millions and millions of dollars, a painting. Or it might be the number one in the world famous band or singer, you know, having, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers and, you know, putting on concerts with, you know, hundreds of thousands of people. And that, and it's so attractive for souls, for Lockic souls, and that whatever they say, whatever they sing is affecting millions or thousands and thousands. So in that sense, it's like, but then in Brahmin life, like how to use those things but not have that, I guess, the ego of that as well. Like, I know from my experience, you know, when I first started playing even for Baba and in Madhuban, you know, I was so self-conscious of playing, you know. I was thinking, why is it that I can play this perfectly alone in my room with no one around, but as soon as you get on stage, it'll be a mess. You know, fumbling and missing chords and sort of like, think, what is this? You know, like, just because there's an audience or someone watching. And I used to think, how is it that I can be the same off stage, so to speak? I mean, Baba says it's all a stage anyway, but I mean, okay, we say, okay, this is a stage and you're off stage, but how can it be the same on stage as this off stage, that you're not sort of inhibited or affected by if somebody's watching or not watching, or an audience. So that used to always sort of like not puzzle me, but I was thinking, you know, if I watched musicians or artists perform, like well known, you could see they'd be totally lost in their music and it'd be their song, and that's what was so attractive, because it was their own song and they were 100% in that, and that's what become the attraction, you know. But if you're doing that and somehow self-conscious, it wouldn't be 100%. I used to sometimes gauge myself, think, okay, it was about 30% today, or, you know, 40%. It was because you'd be affected by that. So I think that part is like, as it becomes slowly and slowly more, as you do that more and more, you become more comfortable doing that. And of course, then it becomes more natural and more normal. And I remember one time, it was the first time I experienced this, was that there's probably about 600 people or something in Harmony Hall at the top here. And I remember it was an Amrit Vela, and I remember playing, and I looked up after 45 minutes, and it was, the hall was like 600 or 700 people or something in the hall, but I had no idea they were there, that many people. And it was like probably the first time I really experienced that I was 100% focused, concentrated, and the feeling of just being an instrument, that was the key thing. And of course, then it was a feeling, okay, we're all just instruments. If we're a good instrument, then we're in tune. Like if you relate that to a musical instrument, if the musical instrument's in tune, then it's going to sound good. Yeah. If it's out of tune, it doesn't matter what you play, it's always going to be, you know, okay, we might clap, somebody sings out of tune, you know, somebody sings out of tune for their courage to get up and do it, but, you know, if it's really in tune and in really in there, then it's like it's something which will uplift and it'll be a joy and pleasure and all that. But so it was like the feeling, okay, if we're just an instrument, that's the main thing. You know, just to be the instrument. And then, of course, whatever comes out from that is always going to be good in that sense. So it's like so that was a real stamp of, wow, just to be an instrument. And that's probably was the space I always thought that, wow, this is what I always wanted to be, just an instrument. So you were like, I guess, a channel for Baba in that sense, because you're 100% focused in the present, also in silence. And I used to find that even when playing, if I had a thought about what I was playing or had start thinking, then it would stop, you know. So I was thinking, wow, you know, even, you know, just, so it's almost like, you know, it's like if you're doing something and you see someone in the audience, you know, then all of a sudden you've sort of broken that sort of, you know, of what you're playing, you get distracted by that. So, yeah, it was really that thing of being an instrument. So, and then, of course, whatever anyone said would also be neutral as well. You wouldn't be affected by the praise if somebody praised you, oh, that was really good. Or if somebody said, oh, is that the same thing you've been playing for the last 10 years, you know? And sometimes, you know, and in the past that would really affect me, you know, sort of like in the sense of, you know, if somebody said a criticism or some comment that was, you know, not constructive, then I'd just stop. Sometimes for months, and then you start again and then get back into it. So the instrument aspect, then you're sort of, the feeling is you're just an instrument, and okay, it can be like this or it can be like that, but you're not internally affected by that remark. So it's just the best you can do. And okay, it's not perfect, but then it doesn't matter. It's more you're just in playing that part, you know. And the part's no different to any other part in the sense of if somebody's, you know, it's not okay if you play music, you're up here or something, and if you're doing this, you're down here. It's like it's the same vision, the same attitude, the same that whatever someone's doing. So then you can, it's just a part. You know, but to master that is like, I feel, is when we accept everyone's part as it is. And I think this was probably one of my biggest challenges here in over time is, you know, when things are happening or you have some sanskara. Because in Madhuban, you know, we don't have outside world as mm-hmm. such. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not going to work somewhere else in the lokic, very lokic places, and that we have just an awasis here. But, you know, what my feeling is up to now, that whatever we have to learn, of course, the best place to learn that is where we are, you know. And this is sort of sometimes where I used to observe, you know, sometimes you come across souls that are in a space where they're totally discontent with their situation, the people around them. They say, I've had enough of this, I've had enough of these people, I'm going, you know. So they go somewhere else. And then within 6 months, a year, same stories emerged again with a different set of actors, different set of people, but the same, a similar situation of what they have to learn, you know, their drama. So it's obviously the souls, we're creating our own drama in that sense, but within Madhuban, it's like all, it's the sanskaras with everyone and how you get on with everyone, how you cooperate with everyone, all the things Baba says, of course, but it's all in-house. So it's sometimes very, very subtle, but you have the best people to teach you what you have to learn in that environment, and that's been the same here for me. Sometimes, you know, you can be okay as a foreigner being in Madhuban. Sometimes souls will have, you know, a legacy left over from the British Raj, you know. They don't want to be ruled over by a foreigner or, you know, that type. You know, like, it's very subtle, but it's like, and so you think, okay, and sometimes it's like also, even within India, and, you know, when Baba says soul consciousness is our first and last lesson, yeah, it's so deep in that sense that even if somebody comes in front of someone here and just by the dress they'll know where someone's from and what state, whatever of India, you know, in that sense. So even if India would say, okay, so many states, but everyone will dress a little bit different in their cultural thing. And so how to see all that as in a soul conscious way as well, where we're not sort of, you know, oh, they're from there, or they're from south, or they're from north, or they're from east, or they're from there. So it's you know, like in the sense of the soul aspect, of course, it's seeing through all those things as well. And of course, India had the caste system in the past as well. So that's another, that, you know, like there's many layers of things which to be that soul conscious, that when we see someone, we're seeing them just in that sense of that soul and that character. I think this is one of the biggest challenges, you know, and that's obviously why Baba says this is our first and last lesson in that sense, because it's so, we take everything on a physical form to see the invisible, as even with Baba. Now, we don't see Baba with the physical eyes, but we experience that. Mm. So it's so those things are like, and of course, I've, you know, the challenges here in the past is like, you know, some of those challenges now, I see those particular souls that were part of that journey with me, I see them now that they are absolutely my best teachers, you know, because the drama pushes the things towards us which we have to learn the most, you know. We can't escape that. There's no, even if you go to a desert island, someone's going to roll up, I'm sure. Or something will roll up, you know, that will push the button, you know, like. So it's, we have to go through that. But I remember Didi once saying, she said, you know, I had this drama and, you know, one particular soul, and she said, well, he's here to stay, deal with it, you know. So it was just like, but, you know, you're expecting some magic solution from a senior, but they know also, because they're, as we go further and further, we realize that, okay, these, when souls, or when we have the challenges with others and others sanskaras, and we, especially if we go to a senior complaining, well, you know, that's like the finger pointing, you know, one finger's pointing this way, but three are coming back to me. So they know it's your story as well, you know, that you have to use gyan to to find a solution with that. Mm. You know, and in a real sense, because if somebody's like you see that if somebody's purposely being negative, for example, towards you, or purposely doing things which are really, you know, they're doing them purposely to push your button or to, you know, on a negative side. But then I remember for my experience was like, until I got to a point where I realized they're just playing their part, their actions are their karmic story, and my actions, my reaction back to them is my story. So if I'm upset that they're doing this, then that's my story, you know. They're just doing that. You know, so it was, I mean, it sounds really simple, but it's so almost like when that's realized, of course, it's like a penny that drops because you realize, okay, they're just playing their part. It's their fortune. Why should I be... react to them in the same way, you know, even if you think they're doing that to you. But that's, I guess that's that lesson when Baba says, okay, don't give sorrow, don't take sorrow. So you're not taking that in a sense. You just start to watch that as, okay, it's their fortune. If you need other help, get other help. Why should I expect someone should do something the way I want them to do it? Or, you know, and a big part of that too, I think, is when we mentally we come into this thing of I and my as well, because that's a big, you know, when I find if I use the thing of I'm going to do this or I, something that's always going to be some drama with that, you know. So, and I remember sort of when I reflected on that, I remember Daddy Kumaka, when she was here, she would never say I, you know. She had that really, really strong that, you know, she might say, oh, Daddy will do this, but she would never say I. So it was almost like a mental thing that if I say, if I come into this thinking of I'm going to do, then there's going to be some challenge, you know, because the I has to disappear. Doing is okay doing, but not in the sense I am doing of, oh, I've done this and I've got to do this and, you know, that. Then it's almost like that aspect of our world too will become challenging as well, because then it's like there's some expectation, or if it doesn't happen, then I get burdened by that as well. So I guess sort of it's like a you have an endeavor to do, but doing in a way where it's a natural flow and not thinking that I have to do. For example, I had a recent event. I went back to Australia. There was a Lockick brother had left the body, and the part I had was executor of his will and property and all that. So, and I remember sort of when it come to the point of, you know, this place he had, this house, and it was, you know, a big job to clean up. And I remember when I accepted, do I accept to do this, or do I pay someone else to do this? And I remember sort of come back to think, well, things can be used in a good way for people of charity, and rather than just get it all, put it in all a big tip and get rid of everything like that. So, but I was very aware in that process that I didn't mentally come into this think that I have to do this. I was really aware of that I didn't want to have in the mind that I have to do this. I was doing, but I didn't think like that. And of course, it was fun in the end to do. It was like it was a big job, a lot of action, a lot of sort of things, but it was like not the burden in the sense of that I have to do this.
So you don't accept burdens. When we were talking the other day, you said how... I've forgotten exactly how you put it, but you've always thought that happiness is very important, and you know, you would do your best to step away from things that you saw didn't lead to happiness. I think you're expressing that in many of the things you're saying this morning. Mm. You know, you're not going to
because there's always the feeling
recognizing that this needs doing, but not sort of identifying with it in the sense that it then becomes a burden. It's a big thing and I've just got to do it. And then it feels heavy. That's interesting.
Yeah, because many times if we say, you know, it's like having a list or something, I have all these things to do today. Yeah, I mean, this would be the first, for me, it would be the first mistake, you know, thinking I have to do all these things, you know, these got to be done. And then, of course, you'll go through the process of doing them, but if you think I have to do them, then if, you know, someone comes into the picture or something comes in the thing and you know, I think, no, but, you know, 11 o'clock I have to do this, I'm meeting this and this is late, or so there's already this tension or stress related to. And it's like here, you know, I mean, everyone knows here, Indian time. Who doesn't know Indian time? No? You know, so, you know, if you have someone from, say, or we have someone formerly from Swiss, no, Swiss watch, you know, pretty accurate timings and that, but if it's a little bit what we think late, you know, then, you know, I remember times someone's coming along, you know, you get a phone call, well, we're coming up this morning at, now I hear that, but I don't hear it as well, you know. It's registered someone's coming, but I don't sort of wait, like, for them to come, because I think waiting, in a sense, as well. I mean, who does waiting here? Anyone still that does waiting? Sometimes? Or cubby? Yeah, so I think that's an interesting aspect, too, of when waiting, you know, waiting for what? You know, it's almost like waiting for something to happen or for someone to arrive. So in that process, when I sometimes think of that, of like waiting, and I say that sometimes and I don't do waiting, but it's like if we're making the most of each moment, then where's the question of waiting? You know, that's what I sort of sometimes feel. You know, it's like, because if we're really in that process waiting, I mean, it's horrible. I mean, who likes waiting? Does anyone like waiting? Waiting in a line, waiting in a queue, waiting for someone to arrive when you have to be doing something else.
I can enjoy it as you know, a peace time.
Yeah, but would you call that
when I would have kept when I would have just kept steaming on, busy, and something is making me take a break.
Yeah, well, interesting, because, I mean, I think it's like waiting in a, what I feel anyway, from my experience of waiting, is like to fill in that space with doing something that you're engaged in something, so there's not a wait. It's like, I mean, there's many sayings for waiting, waiting for the kettle to boil, you know. Sometimes the kettle takes forever to boil if you really... If you're waiting for it, it's bad news, you know, like, you know what I mean? It's like, but then if you put the kettle on and you're doing something else, then the kettle comes off and you haven't waited at all. Mm. You've made use of that time. And then, of course, that waiting aspect is not there. But if you're really waiting, then that's, you know, a lot of things can happen in that space where, you know, it's like a waste or... expecting as well, expectations, especially if it's involved with someone else in that. So it's an interesting mental part as well of when we say that, you know.
Yeah, you have a constant love of learning this art of putting spirituality into life. That's what's coming across to me. You know, you're a real learner. You know, you don't just think, oh, well, I don't like this. Oh, well, you know, nothing I can do about it. You know, you actually like,
Well, interesting you say it, because the Indian government, I've been on a student visa for 20 years. They sort of think, well, a real learner, okay. How long's this course of student life going to be? So sometimes I've had that in the ministry, you know, where they say, okay, I get a new visa every 5 years, and I've got student visas. And of course, you know, Baba says this is the student life is the best life. And as we know in Raj Yoga, it's not just for 5 years, it's for the rest of our lives. So when I've related this back to the Indian ministry, you know, they scratch their heads a bit and think, you know, How long is your studies? Yeah, so quick learn, I don't know with that. But yeah, it's I think when we, I guess that sort of comes back again to the present time as well. And it's like I feel, and many years ago actually, just an experience I had with when Baba was in Diamond Hall, and I think it was in the, Daddy Kumaka was still here, so it must have been before 2005 or around that time, but Baba would conduct drill, yeah? And sometimes in Diamond Hall there'd be 20,000 people. And when Baba said, oh, you know, the translation would, okay, we'll go into pin drop silence. Well, Diamond Hall's never pin drop silent. I can assure you, there's, at any one time there's 20, 30, 40 people coughing at once and a lot of background noise. But when Baba was, the seniors were talking to Baba, and it was this dialogue of, okay, how long have we got left of Sangam Yug? You know, so when the dialogue would go to Baba, you know, with the seniors, how long have we got left? And of course, Baba will never give a date. Yeah, he doesn't give a date for that. He'll come back to us and say, okay, are you ready? You know, are you ready for that? And of course, there'd be silence, you know. But when he conducted the drill after this dialogue with the seniors, you know, and of course, that time was in, what was happening in the world was the big tsunami that happened in Japan when the nuclear reactor and all this was damaged and all this big drama with the, and so a lot of souls left the body in that particular time. And when Baba did this drill, I was sort of in this sort of space where I was sort of thinking, okay, Baba doesn't give a time for Vinash, but I mean, for these souls that were in Japan, that was their last moments, you know, a lot of those souls, that was like their Vinash, you know, in that sense.
Anyone, any questions you'd like to ask David, please do. There's a microphone here. Is there any particular gem that you've omitted to say that you're just burning to share?
I just to finish, just before the traffic and all, but that experience when Baba did that drill was like, I had the experience that it was, when he did the drill, it was such an experience of being in the present moment that I felt, wow, this present moment is eternal, and it always stays eternal. And I felt that, okay, also in the present moment, the soul will leave the body. It won't leave the body in the future. You know what I mean? So it's almost like this: if this present moment is eternal forever, and every moment is measured for eternity, then of course, even our last breath will be in this present moment. Now, you might say, okay, nothing happened now, so that was a present moment. But, you know, in that sense, it goes on, that present moment. So the experience was like, okay, how to be as much as possible present, because that's almost like that's home base. That's our, and that space is this space of silence, which is soul world, yeah? When we're in that space of soul world, we're just suspended animation. We're just this seed. And it's, if we experience that state now in this present moment, then that's home base. So it was like the feeling, wow, of course, Baba, how would Baba give a date for the present moment when Vinash would take place? Because it will be in the present moment. It won't be in the future. So, you know what I mean? It's like it was like a real insight into that, okay, of course it can't be. I mean, you know, sometimes Baba says, you know, your last breath, or, you know, if your last thoughts will lead you to your destination, and we don't know about tomorrow, we don't know the next second, actually, you know. So in a true sense, we might say, okay, no, it's going to be, we're going to be sitting in this hall, okay, you know, a few seconds, we're all here, but then somebody just might leave. Someone just may leave the body, so that was their last second. So in that sense, it was real, wow, of course Baba can't give a date for that. Otherwise, he'd say it's going to happen, you know, tomorrow at 4 o'clock, and we'll be all waiting for 4 o'clock tomorrow, and nothing happened, you know. you know, it can't give a date for that. So, and that's what's happened in the past too, you know, where there's been some posters with a date on it, you know, 1976 Vinash or something. But it's like there was that feeling, of course, if we're being aware and being in this moment now, then we can't be deceived in that sense. So it's like there was a feeling of home base. Mm. But then the reality of being in that present moment means all our past karmic things have to be cleared. We can't have any desires of something else in the future, because that's going to pull our mind away from this present moment. So there's many things that make up that, but it was just that insight into, wow, of course, that sort of, that's obviously the karmati stage.
Mm.
As a detached observer.
Mm. Well, thank you, David. So is there anyone who would like to ask a question or two?
You still have the translate that you made.
The
translate. Book and with a candle.
Oh, well, it wasn't really. It was just a candle. A candle, a book, and a drawing pin. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just like sometimes I feel, I mean, obviously, you know, the thing is, it's like, I think initially we need something, we need music, we like to hear music, good songs, some music that's going to take us beyond, or a nice picture or a nice painting. But of course, we know at the end of the day, we have to transcribe that into our own to make our connection with Baba to that, you know, soul conscious state and to remembrance of Baba without anything, actually. If we relied on any of these things, then, you know, then that's not the endeavor either, you know. So we have to somehow transcribe that over to how can I be in remembrance or in a concentrated in a state where that can be while I'm doing anything, actually, not just Baba's room or my favorite translite. So they're all things, good things we use, but at the end of the day, I have to make that more than that, you know. And it's interesting because, I mean, being in art department, we have hundreds of pictures, you know, hundreds of pictures of Bab Dada, Shiv Baba, and you wouldn't believe how many times somebody comes in and they still want another type. They want another point of light, they want a different one, a different color, more rays, less rays, just a point, a seed, a star, and it goes on, you know. As many souls as there are, that they'll see Shiv Baba differently or have a different feeling, like this or like this or like this, which is fine, but it's interesting in that sense of, you know, we all see Baba differently. What our choices are for a translite or for meditation might be good for you, but someone else, they go, oh, I don't like that. You know, or that's, wow, that's fantastic, that one. So it's different, yeah.
I think there's a brother. Yes.
Yeah, I have a question. So, like, when you say, like, when you're doing something and you put 100% your focus in that, so can you describe it? Like, so what's the difference between, like, put 100% in focus to doing something and be so concerned in that moment? I mean, the logic, they can put 100% your focus to doing a job, but we don't call that as a so concerned, right? So can you just describe it in, like, when you're doing that and work with the other?
Well, I think, I mean, it's like, it's 100% in the sense of when, and soul conscious, but it's like, if I'm in a state of concentration and silence, yeah? I mean, it's like, okay, when we say soul conscious, what does that really mean, soul consciousness, no? There's many aspects to soul consciousness. So even Lokic souls, I mean, they can still, in a sense, have the experience of being soul conscious, but they may not know it's soul conscious. Mm. You know, it's like a child, no? Mm. A child do something is more soul conscious because they're not thinking, they're just doing, isn't it? It's like in that sense of, okay, Golden Age, we're soul conscious naturally. We're not thinking, I am a soul, I am a point of light. With a knowledge aspect, they're just naturally soul conscious. So I think in that sense, it's like there's a, of course, we have knowledge, so we know, okay, different aspects of soul consciousness, no. Okay, we can have a thought, okay, I'm a point of light, but there's more than the soul just being a point of light. It has a whole part. It's eternal. This is one of many, many parts. And everyone else as well. So it's that, we have that, not, we have the knowledge of that, you know, so that's a different aspect of, it's like when, you know, it's like if you're doing something and everyone I think's had the experience when you get lost doing that action and all of a sudden you look at the time and a lot of time's gone past, but it just seems like 5 minutes ago, might be hours. It's like if we have good meditation as well. If we sit in good concentration, 45 minutes can go past in a flash. Yeah? You've had that? We've had that where you sit in meditation, all of a sudden think, wow, just that, you were so lost in that with Baba and Gyan within that, but concentrated that the time somehow disappeared. And the same as if we're not concentrated. 45 minutes can be like torture. Like, is this going to finish? You know, when's this? I'm available. Or whatever, you know. It's like, that's the difference, is like that, you know, in that sense.
So, yesterday I was having a conversation with somebody. So, he asked me a question, and I'm going to ask you that question. He says, I keep going to Baba and saying the same thing over and over again. You know, he repeats his story or his, I don't know what grievance is, but I said I can relate to that. But any of your thoughts on this particular subject, that when you go to Baba and you keep on, you know, telling him the same thing as if he's deaf?
Yeah, I haven't really had that experience like that, but yeah, it's interesting. I mean, we talk in our mind to that. I mean, it's, I guess it's like when Baba's becoming more naturally your companion, you know, where you're doing things with Baba in mind and it becomes like a normal, you know, like normal process. I guess for my experience a lot now, I don't so much dialogue like that, but it's more, okay, to sit in silence and just enjoying that space of soul world and like home base in that sense. So, but then when thoughts do come, you know, it's almost like out of that space of silence, you're getting direction or what the next step is in that sense. And naturally from Baba in that sense, it's like Baba knows what we need anyway, you know, it's like without even saying. So, you know, asking is like, I mean, we can dialogue, we talk to Baba, of course, but it's like how to make that. You know, I guess it's like if we, yeah, we all go through that process, I suppose, where we have our, you know, we, okay, sit in meditation, talk to Baba, talk about your day, what you did, the things you did do, didn't do. I mean, you can have that dialogue, but then there gets to a point where we're able to just sit and just experience silence, you know, and that's enough as well. But it might take a lot of talking the same things, I don't know. For some souls it might be like that. I don't think I answered that, but anyway, I suppose.
So thank you for that wonderful, profound conversation. I'm sure everyone took something from his conversation, and I'm sure it'll aid to your journey. It'll help to your journey. It was very wonderful. Thank you so much. And Sister Helena, thank you so much for taking the best out of him.